You putting your attention and talking about the problems is not doing anything. You talking about the good times to come for yourself, the money that's going to come to you, the relationships that are going to come to you, the success in business. Because remember, we're vibrational beings.
83% of Americans identify as not very happy, which can hold you back and negatively affect your relationships and your business. On this podcast, we discuss the proven steps to happiness so you can restore balance and rekindle your joy.
Welcome to another edition of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. Today is gonna be kind of extra special because we've got one of the OGs in the space with us today. Welcome, Deborah Poneman. How the heck are you?
I am so great and even greater because I get to be with you.
Oh, you're sweet. So we're going to jump right in because I've got so many amazing questions to ask you. So you've been in this world of transformation for many years, and some of today's most renowned transformational leaders are actually your students, which is quite amazing. Can you tell us about your journey and how is it that you're able to coach these ridiculously smart people?
Okay, well, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version, but in the early 1970s, I actually became a teacher of transcendental meditation, and I taught TM to thousands of people through the decade of the 70s, and then at the end of the decade of the 70s, I know everybody's calculating how old I am now. I own it. So at the end of the decade of the 70s, even though I love teaching meditation, I realized that woman does not live by mantra alone. And I needed some adult things like car insurance and health insurance, or maybe a car to insure. That would have been nice. So I thought, okay, I have got to make some money so I could go back to teaching meditation. And where do people make money? And I thought, they make money in LA. I watched the Beverly Hillbillies. So, you know, I knew that was where the money was. So I moved to LA, started selling investments because that's how people make money. Dismal failure. I never sold one except to my dear old dad who bought one because he felt sorry for me. But now I didn't even have my stipend or I didn't even have my food that I ate at the cafeteria at Maharishi International University in Fairfield, Iowa. So there I am in LA and you know how that expression, we make plans and God laughs. So I made this plan to make a lot of money in LA and God had a gigantic yuck over that. But one day somebody invited me to a money seminar at the Learning Annex in LA. This was 1979, 1980. And I go in and the guy is talking about the law of attraction, which was decades before The Secret made it kind of a household concept. And he said this, he said, we are vibrational beings. And if we are vibrating with poverty, I'm never going to get out of debt, I'm never going to find my soulmate, we're like tuning forks. Yeah. If an F sharp is vibrating and a B flat comes towards it, it repels the B flat. And if we're vibrating with poverty and some monetary windfall comes our way, we push it away. Or if our soulmate comes our way, if we're always talking about we're too old, we're too this to find a soulmate. Well, this guy, every single word he was saying that night just vibrated with me. And he also said, go home. And if you don't know what you want to do with your life, write down what makes you happy. So I wrote down, no surprise, talk. And I wrote down travel and I wrote down be a positive influence on people's lives. And I wrote down work with people who I love, who we have a good time, who we laugh until we cry and cry until we laugh. And literally the next morning, I woke up and I realized I got to do what that guy does. And I started my seminar company.
Wow.
Yes, success. But did I say yes to excess? No, it's yes to success. And what I did was I created my success by using the knowledge that I was teaching. Talk about the OGs. I studied Napoleon Hill and Wallace Wattles and Emmett Fox. These were people who wrote their success books in the 1920s and 1930s, but the knowledge was still relevant. It's still relevant today.
Have you read Napoleon Hill's newest book, The Devil? Have you read it?
Well, since Napoleon Hill died, I think, in 1952, it can't be that new.
Well, it actually is because his wife or people inherited it were like, no, we don't want to talk about it. It's too religious. Two different heirs were like, no. So it did come out in the last 20 years.
No.
I haven't read it, but my life partner's read it. And she's like, the stuff that he talks about is like cutting edge neuroscience. Like that guy had this stuff figured out like eons ago.
I am so not surprised because everything in Think and Grow Rich with Peace of Mind, there's nothing in his books that is not relevant to our lives in 2024. And I can't wait to read that book. I will look it up. No one's told me this before, so thank you.
Yeah, I don't know how she found it, but we've done some presentations on it and the stuff that she has shared is just like, it's amazing. So why do you think you were so successful right out of the chute?
Well, here's the thing. I was successful right out of the chute in 1980 because I just discovered there was a blueprint for success. I just did what these great masters told me to do. But you know what I did? I culled all of the most powerful principles from Wallace Wattles, from Napoleon Hill, from Florence Kovalchin, and I used those and I taught those. So everybody didn't have to read like 20 books and listen to 20 cassette tapes. I think maybe it was reel to reel back then. And I just used the principles that I learned. But I'll tell you something else. Do you know the story that I gave up my whole career at the height of my success? Did I ever tell you that?
I think you did, but let's hear it again.
So this was the early 1980s. And one of the principles that I use that I learned from all of these great masters is that an idea comes to you because it is supposed to be manifested by you. That's why we all have different ideas. And what these masters say is that the idea is a gift from God, and who are you to turn it away? And that's why we all have different ideas. You do a podcast on happiness and entrepreneurship, may teach yes to success. Other people teach about leadership. Other people raise orchids. Other people play the violin. But what the masters say is that also, when you have that desire, the talent to fulfill that desire is in the desire itself. It's like the oak tree is in the acorn, right? As my friend Derek Rydell would say, but it's true. And they also say that the creator isn't a trickster. The creator doesn't give you an idea and then say, but ha, 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 I'm not going to give you what you need to fulfill that idea. That isn't how the universe works. So I had the idea to teach success seminars. So because I studied these great masters, I knew that I had the ability to do it. And another thing that I learned from these great masters is what is sacred must be kept secret. And what that meant to me was, and to them, don't tell everybody what your idea is when it's a tiny seed that can be easily crushed by what I call the discouragement committee. Mm. All of those people, right? We know who the discouragement committee is in our life. All the people are going to tell you, there are too many podcasts. There are too many books on leadership. There are too many people who are relationship coaches. There are too many vegetarian blogs. Why would you share your idea? Sacred and secret come from the same root. What is sacred, like your precious idea, must be kept secret until it sprouts and it's a strong little plant that can't be easily stomped on by the discouragement committee. And I know that this flies in the face of what so many people say. They say, share your ideas and people are going to hold you responsible or accountable. I mean, really, my friend Janet Atwood, you know, of the passion test, we always say to each other, okay, let's hold each other accountable. Then a week later, we're like, what was it that we were going to hold each other accountable for?
Yeah. So Deborah, look, everyone had access to these great leaders that you studied under. And the fact that you are now teaching some of the most renowned transformational leaders says that you did something different. What did you do differently that everyone else could have done that's led to you to your success?
Well, first of all, you have to understand, I started my company in the 1980s when the only people who knew these ideas were people who were in the science of mind or church of religious science. It was considered very esoteric that your thoughts create your reality. So I think maybe I was one of the OGs that I brought these ideas out in modern terms in the 1980s. So that's why people like Marcy Shimoff, she was actually my personal assistant, and Deepak Chopra and Janet Atwood and Steve, I mean, I could go on and give you a list, But I think it was because they were forward-thinking people. And this knowledge, I mean, now The Secret kind of made it a household concept that your thoughts create your reality. But at that time, it was so fresh and new. And I think that that's one of the reasons why I was so successful. However, I just want to tell you one thing. One of the principles that I teach is that the one thing you have to do if you want to be successful, especially now, is let your heart lead the way. And I know that sounds like kind of pedantic. Oh yeah, Deborah, let your heart lead the way. But it's really true, because we often let our minds lead the way, but our minds are still filled with the lies that were told to us when we were kids about not being good enough or smart enough or the right color or the right sexual orientation or the right gender. And or maybe our second cousin twice removed told us that we were going to be a loser our whole life. And you know, the media tells us stuff, our parents tell us stuff, and then we have an idea, but it's filtered through those neural pathways that were created. So what I say, instead of filtering your ideas through your mind, actually physically put your attention on the region of the heart and there think, okay, what do I want to do? Where do I want to go with this idea? And the reason why most of your listeners probably have heard of all of the aforementioned, my aforementioned students, and they probably have not heard of me, is because at the height of my success, I was about to have my own daytime TV talk show. My Yes to Success book was in the hands of two New York publishers. In 1988, I gave it all up. And I didn't come back until 20 years later. Now you might be thinking, why? And the answer is, because I teach to let your heart lead the way, my little girl was born in 1988.
Oh.
And when she was born, I took one look at her and I thought, she wasn't that little, but I took one look at her and I thought, you know, people are very attuned to imposter syndrome. And if I taught people to follow your heart, and my heart was with my little girl, I didn't want to leave her to go to the bathroom, let alone I was supposed to go on a tour of Southeast Asia. I would be so inauthentic. And I believe I don't want my authenticity meter being way over in the negative realm. So I knew the concept that the idea comes to you because you're supposed to manifest it. But I also believe that what you were put on earth to do is not going to go away if you take a year out to be with your mother, as she's maybe she has some disease and she needs someone to take care of her, or to go to Africa and hold AIDS babies, or whatever it is. And I also believe that your idea isn't going to go away if you take 20 years out to raise your kids, because my son was born 3 years later.
That's amazing. So I'm going to give two real life examples of following your heart instead of your mind. For 20 something years, I followed my mind trying to make a bunch of money in real estate, thinking it was going to bring me happiness. And my life partner spent 25 years at a global IT firm because that's what her mom wanted to do. Now we're both following our hearts and we're happiness coaches helping people transform their lives by eliminating these limiting beliefs they have. And we've never been happier and we've never been more purposeful and we've never been more fulfilled. So yes, I need to do, and I think most people need to go from their head to their heart and not just what they follow, but everything, whether it's partnerships or sexual relations or anything, like spend more time in your heart.
Absolutely. And again, this sounds like blah, 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 but it's not. I have been in this world for, I mean, teaching this for over 40 years. And I've seen that when people think that some material success is going to bring them happiness, I see what happens. If they don't have the inner success, if they don't have the inner fulfillment, yeah, you can get your big house on the hill. But when you open the doors, it's going to be like one of those fake houses on a Hollywood movie set. There's empty, there's nothing inside, because no car, no house, no best-selling book is going to fill that emptiness. What's going to fill that emptiness is doing what you love, giving love, being authentic, all of those things that we know, but we have to trust that we live in a benevolent universe. And if you do follow your heart, then you are going to be rewarded and you will be able to put your head on your pillow on your deathbed and say, I had a life worth living.
Yeah, hopefully it won't be your deathbed when you figure this out. But the most important things in life have nothing to do with money. They have to do with the relationship you have with yourself and the relationship you have with people in your life that are important. That's all that really, really matters, and that you're loved and that you give love, just like you said. So you had a near-death experience, which I have not heard the story about. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I did have a near-death experience. And actually, it kind of substantiates what I had been teaching. It happened in 2015, and I'd already been teaching that your thoughts create your reality, that your words have dominion over life and death, as it says in the Bible. Not that I'm any kind of biblical scholar. Thou shalt decree a thing and it shall be added unto you. In the Bible, it doesn't say thou shalt decree a thing and hey, give it a chance. You never know, it might be added unto you. No, it says it will be added unto you. So anyway, in 2015, I never get sick. By the way, hint, thou shalt decree a thing, it shall be added unto you. I never get sick. And in 2015, I had just come back from India, like I did a few weeks ago. I go to India often. And when I came home on a Sunday, and on Monday, I wasn't feeling well. So I did what I usually do, took some electrolytes, took some golden seal, whatever it was. Usually that knocks it out. But by Tuesday, I was sicker. And Wednesday, I was sicker. And by Saturday, I was so sick that I was lying in bed. I was living alone at the time. And I thought, I could die here and nobody would know. So I did what any intelligent person would do. I called my local healer and he looked in on me long distance and he said, I will help you, but you have to promise you do exactly what I say. And I was really fading. I said, anything. He said, call 911 immediately.
Wow.
And I couldn't. I said, you. Because I was really fading. So a few moments, or how many moments, I don't know, they had to break in my door because I couldn't even lift myself off the bed. They asked me what hospital I wanted to go to. I said Evanston, because I lived in Evanston, Illinois at the time. And they didn't think they had time to get me the 11 minutes to Evanston Hospital. So they took me to a little hospital around the corner and they bring me into the ER. They're putting every tube into every orifice. And I start dying. And the reason I knew that I was dying, it was because when my eyes were open, I could see everybody rushing around trying to save my life. And when my eyes were closed, I could also see everybody rushing around trying to save my life. By the way, my blood pressure when they came to my door was 52 over 28.
Whoa.
Which is not compatible with life. So anyway, my healer had called my former husband, still my best friend, and he had rushed over to the hospital, and I really looked like I was going to the other side. And while I was in that space between life and death, Brad, you're going to love this. You know this thing that we say there are no mistakes in the universe?
Yeah.
Well, I saw in that place between life and death that every single movement of the doctor's hands, every single movement of the nurse's hands, every was all guided by a beautiful divine light. And I even saw that one of the nurses fumbled an IV back and dropped it on the gurney and everybody shot her daggers. But I saw that that was guided by a divine light because when she bent her head down to pick it up, another nurse, she went, oh, and she went over and she made an adjustment on some monitor that saved my life. So I'm lying there and I'm seeing this light show, and my husband, former husband, had arrived at the time, and this was wild. The nurse, it didn't look like I was going to make it. And the nurse went over to him, put her hand on his shoulder and said, don't worry, she's going to be fine. And in that place between life and death, I saw the words, she's going to be fine, come out of her mouth, the energy of the words. It was like a My Little Pony rainbow, like did it? It was light, like a rainbow, and it went into my body and it gave me all of my strength back. It started bringing me into the realm of the living. And then the doctor comes in, looks at the monitor, says in this really gruff voice, get that blood pressure up. We're losing her. I saw the words come out of his mouth, accompanied by this like brown, gray gunk. It even smelled in that place between life and death. It smelled like a swamp. We're going to lose her. It went into my body and again took all my strength away. And I'm lying there thinking, OMG, what I've been teaching for the last 3-4 decades is the truth. Our words have dominion over life and death. So I made a deal with God. I said, God, let me live. And I'll promise you two things. One is I will tell everybody the power of their words. And number two, I will never say anything about myself or anyone else that I don't want to happen. Because you know how we say things about our kids, like, oh, well, he, blah, 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 or she, so. And I promise, because those words are coming out of your mouth into their physiologies and making them more of what you don't want them to be because it doesn't serve their highest good. So I made that deal with God. And the good news is I lived.
I mean, literally, I want to do a podcast just on that because I've watched a number of near-death documentaries. And this one particular woman who was literally covered, there's no way she could have seen. And afterwards, when she came through it, she described like all of the equipment and the different devices that they used. And the doctors were like, there was no way she could have seen that. So that is absolutely fascinating. What did you learn from that? I guess you learned that words are as powerful as you've always taught them.
Yeah. And I also made the commitment to the God of my understanding that I would tell people, because, you know, we are so casual about the words that we use. Like right now, a lot of people are very filled with fear. But you know what? You're enforcing the fear by sitting around with your friends talking about how horrible the world is. It's going to hell in a handbasket. There's no way out. Stop it.
Yeah.
When you notice that you're doing that, what I recommend people do is just say, cancel. I learned it from these great masters, cancel, and replace it with words that you do want. Because I saw in that near-death experience that your words, and not only that, your vibration, if you are vibrating with doom and gloom, that vibration ripples out. We know that from the movie, What the Bleep Do We Know? And what we want to do is we want to have a lot of people who are vibrating with the world. It's going in a good direction and peace is possible and love is the answer. And if we are that way, then if we're lit up like that, we will spread that light. Just like one lighthouse brings light to thousands of ships, we will bring light to thousands of people.
So what was your illness?
Well, it turned out that I had what's called a sepsis, and only about 50% of people make it. It is deadly bacteria in your blood.
Whoa.
And I had not one, but two deadly bacteria in my blood. And I mean, it was very close. They even had to put one of those big, it looks like you're the Michelin tire man, suits, because my body had no ability to regulate its temperature anymore. So it had to be regulated externally. But I pulled through, and I really do believe that I pulled through because it's my mission to have people start watching their thoughts. And you know, Emmett Fox, he wrote the 7-Day Mental Diet. I don't know if you ever read it.
No.
It's a little pamphlet. And he says that the hardest diet to go on is the diet where you fast from negativity.
Wow.
And it's funny because right now I'm at the Optimum Health Institute. This is a real background, my quaint little room. And I am fasting on juice and wheatgrass juice, which is somewhere. And it's pretty hard to fast on juice and wheatgrass juice, but I come here once or twice a year to do a cleanse. But to fast on negativity, he says that it is the hardest thing that you could ever do. And I challenge people, try to go a full day, try to go a full hour without talking ill about somebody or putting down yourself or saying something negative. You will be shocked at how difficult it is to be positive for. And that doesn't mean that we deny that there are some problems in the world, but you putting your attention and talking about the problems is not doing anything. You talking about the good times to come for yourself, the money that's going to come to you, the relationships that are going to come to you, the success in business, because remember, we're vibrational beings.
For sure. So a lot of people who have near-death experiences, they start to go to the other side, and then they say that they don't want to come back. You obviously said, you wanted to come back, but did you get to that state of, oh my God, this is amazing, or did you not cross over enough?
Well, now that you're asking, that was actually my second near-death experience. And that time I did not cross over enough. I was just watching the light show of everybody's words. I hardly tell anybody this, but one of the, I think they're called nurse's assistants, because I could actually see people's thoughts when I was on the other side making my transition that time. And I actually heard one of the nurse's assistants saying, I wish you would die already so I could get home. True story. And I saw that energy go into me, but I was already on my way back at that time. But no, I didn't. But I did have another near-death experience. And I did have the decision at that time. It was in 1977. I did have the decision whether I wanted to stay or go. But when I got to that place, there was a little voice that actually gave me a choice. And then kind of pushed me a little in the direction of, you've done enough good, you can go, but there's a lot more that you have to do. So I said, all right.
I think we're going to have to do another show about these two near-death experiences because it's fascinating to me. So tell me about, as we're wrapping up here, a couple of big questions. I want to hear about the trip to India. Why'd you go there and kind of what did you learn? And then we're going to wrap by asking, like, what do you do now and how can people reach you?
Okay. Well, the reason that I go to India is that I really believe that you don't have to go to anywhere to get in touch with your spirituality and the messages that you need to get from the Creator. I teach people this technique called sitting for guidance, which is very similar to what Napoleon Hill teaches in Think and Grow Rich, which is sitting for ideas. He says he never starts his day without taking out a pad of paper and a pen and writing at the top, God, what are you and I going to create today? And then he just lets that pen flow across the page and gets the answer. See, people say, oh, Neil Donald Walsh got messages from God. Like what? You think God only speaks to Neil Donald Walsh? But in the meantime, Napoleon Hill also taught us that we can get messages from God, and we can, but we just have to give a channel. And I believe sitting down and writing those messages without editing, just let those answers flow to you. So I believe that you can have spiritual experiences. You can have messages from God. I am a meditation teacher. I do meditate for over an hour a day. But the reason why I go to India so often is that I believe that there is something about the air in India that is just, it's just like oozing with spirituality. And whenever I go, I tend to move forward in my life in monumental ways. I do teach meditation through the Art of Living Foundation. So I go to the Art of Living Ashram, which is in outside of Bangalore. And I just go there. But anywhere I go in India, to me, it is a sacred holy land. For me, a lot of people have other places that they go that they feel that vibration. But when I go there, I just feel like I'm closer to the God of my understanding, and there's even more of a channel. But bottom line is, you really don't have to go anywhere. You just have to create that channel for Source, Spirit, God to speak to you.
I'm going to sneak in another question, actually. How do you stay positive in such a negative world?
Oh, I love that question. Well, I'll tell you, there are a lot of ways that you could stay positive, but one is only hang around people that are positive and uplifting, like Brad Chandler. He's one you should hang out around, because why do you want to be with the discouragement committee? I probably revealed that how old I am, because I did become a meditation teacher. I went to teacher training in 1971, and I didn't just pop out of my mom and go to teacher training. But I'll just give you an example. People who are my age, because I am in my 70s, they sit around and they talk about, oh, then my needs are going, you know, cataracts, and oh, next I'm going to get a hearing aid, my medicines that I'm on. When people start talking like that, I leave. I say, oh, you know what? I got to go take care of something, because I don't want to put those images in my mind. I don't want to subscribe to a magazine where all of the ads are about walk-in bathtubs or, you know, phones with those big, gigantic numbers, right? So number one, stay positive by hanging around other people who look for the good and put their attention on what's good. The other thing, way to stay positive in a negative world is don't listen to the negativity. Don't sit in front of the TV.
Turn the news off.
Turn the news off. I mean, you want to be informed a little bit, but that could be maybe 2 minutes a day. Just keep up on what's really important, but don't put that negativity. Also, in terms of TV, everything is vibrational. So why would you sit there and watch TV programs that make you tense, that lead to your anxiety, that are about car crashes and shoot them up? Because you know, that energy does come out of your TV, and that energy does, I know this is very woo-woo. I mean, do you feel happy and uplifted after you just watched some blood squirting out of 20 people? What I would say is hang around people. Don't put your attention on the news. And one other thing is do good deeds. Do random acts of kindness, because according to science, there is nothing that uplifts you, even if you're in a space of depression or hopelessness, than contribution. Even the National Institute of Health did research on this. When you do a random act of kindness, it not only helps the person, but it increases your oxytocin, which is the feel-good hormone, and it decreases your cortisol, which is the stress hormone. So it's another way to stay positive in a negative world. Just contribute, do those random acts of kindness. And even if it's just in your heart, wishing other people success and prosperity, it will increase your oxytocin.
You don't look anywhere near your age, that's for sure. So good job. Keep doing whatever you're doing. So how can people find you, and what exactly are you doing these days, Deborah?
Well, they can find me at my website, which is yestosuccess.com. It's Y-E-S-T-O. success.com. And what I do is I teach my Yes to Success course, which is an 8-week course. I gave you some of the concepts, but that's just the tippity tip of the iceberg. And believe it or not, I also teach a course called Ageless, Anti-Aging for Your Brain, Your Body, and Your Future. And the reason I started teaching that is people, when I was maybe 68, 69, people are like, what? And I thought, you know what? I should probably teach a course on this, because again, there is a formula for keeping your precious brain, not getting Alzheimer's, not getting dementia. It's lifestyle choices. People think it's heredity. It's not. It's lifestyle choices. And that's basically, and I still do teach meditation, which I think is probably the basis for anti-aging and the basis to success, having that inner silence.
So the choices, the lifestyle choices, I think are driven so much by these limiting beliefs that we form as a child to protect ourselves from these unmet childhood needs. So if you want to live long, you got to figure this stuff out. And it sounds like your Yes to Success or working with me is definitely a way to get rid of these thoughts that helped you as a 6-year-old, but they're killing you as a 56-year-old.
I agree. Your work is amazing. And I know my friend Shelley Lefko introduced you to me, and she's just wild about what you do. And to thank you for your contribution to the planet.
Oh, thank you so much. And you too. And so the podcast, another podcast, if you'd come on, we can talk about the near-death experiences and the longevity stuff, because I'm a health and fitness nut. I turn 51 next month. I can't believe it, but I'm manifesting that I'm going to live to be 110. So I've got almost 60 years left to do this work. And now I have purpose and passion. Like, I don't want to go anywhere. I want to keep doing this because I don't know what the other side is like. I know this is really freaking great. So I want to live here as long as I possibly can.
And you also have 20 years to catch up with me, but I won't wait.
Well, Deborah, that was absolutely amazing. As good as I expected it to be. And I thank you so much for your time.
And thank you. And again, thank you for everything you do for the planet.
Oh, you as well. So that concludes another episode of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. As you heard, I'm on a mission to help 1 million people change their lives by reversing these limiting beliefs that some of us know about and some of us don't. So I need your help. I can't do this alone. So if you like this show, share it, subscribe to it, rate it, review it, anything you can do to help me get the word out. Until next time, love heals all.
Hit subscribe if you don't want to miss out on more life-changing content. And if you're struggling, you don't have to. Go to bradchandler.com/contact There, you can join the Facebook community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and you'll see a button to schedule your freedom and happiness call. See you on the next episode.